This is the Heartland Collegiate Compendium. The legal and regulatory environment of business. Lecture 14, delivered on the 23rd of July of 2008. The title of this lecture is Final Exam Review.
Tonight, Final Exam Review. This is compact. Follow with me. After I've told you what I have to say, you can ask questions of me about it. First and foremost, 100 questions. You will have 2 hours. Some of the questions will be drawn directly from the exams, 1 and 2, and quizzes. I always do that, especially questions that are core objectives, questions that you have had difficulty with on the exams or the quizzes. I will take them verbatim and put them on the final. Other questions will be merely variations. I have covered in the 2 exams my objectives of the course. So you can rest assured that there will not be a substantial deviation from what I've already taught you. Now, let me get specific. Know your case law. I will have on this exam 1 section where I will list 5 cases, and then I will go through 5 questions where I will merely give a phrase or a sentence. And you have to match the case to that phrase or sentence. So, let me go through some of the cases that have been important in this course. Marbury v. Madison, Filburn v. Wickard, Brown v. Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, Reich v. Gonzalez, Zanford v. SEC, Totten v. United States, Sanford v. Dred Scott. Now, to give you an example, I would list 5 cases, and I would simply, in a question that follows that list, judicial review. Yes. Separate but equal. That's it. Now you get the idea. Great. Know your contract law. What are the 4 elements? What constitutes a bona fide offer? Know the rules. Mirror image rule, mailbox rule. As far as contracts go, know what the difference between a unilateral and a bilateral contract, express versus implied, written versus oral. Let me amend parole evidence rule, I should point out too. Know the terminology of contracts. For example, what is an executory versus an executed? Voidable versus void. Liquidated damages. Those kinds of matters are useful to know. Those kinds of terms. There is a whole set of terms. Know them. As far as contracts go, that's a wide-ranging subject. Make sure you know clearly what my expectations were on the exam where I covered it, on the quiz where I covered it, what I've said in class, that comports with what the book has said. Know UCC. The parts that I have discussed. Express warranties, implied warranties under the UCC. know what the UCC covers and what it doesn't cover. Know the statute of frauds. Know the outline of the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. What the difference between a limited warranty and a full warranty is. Know about fair use. I discussed Acuff v. Rose. I want you to know about it. I'm sorry. Campbell v. Acuff Rose. Know the sequence of litigation, particularly for a civil trial. The pleadings, discovery, trial, post-trial. How do appeals work? What's a writ? As far as other cases go, let me throw a couple more. Campbell v. Acuff Rose. Also, Dickerson v. United States and Miranda v. Arizona. Those were a couple of others. I'm trying to think of a few others right off the top of my head that I've covered. Those are the biggies. Those are really important ones. Reach clear back to the, I want you to know your con law. What the outline of several important amendments, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment to some extent, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, and 14th were big in this class. The Sixth Amendment lays out things like your right to a trial by jury, speedy trial, and all that. Fifth Amendment has due process and the right against self-incrimination. Fourth Amendment provides for procedural. Know the difference between procedural and substantive due process. That's very important. Reaching clear back to the very early part of the course, I will revisit the distinction between deontology and teleology and its applications in formalism, utilitarianism, act consequentialism, rule consequentialism. Who were the promoters? The biggies that I named. Jeremy Bentham was act consequentialism. John Stuart Mill was rule consequentialism. Immanuel Kant laid out the categorical imperative. Know it. Know that. That's important. Because that is the basis upon which we design, craft our laws and the enforcement of them. Know some Latin terms that I've brought up, and some French terms, as well as some, obviously, English terms. By the way, speaking of English, know the basis of our law, what our law is. What's the common law, statutory law? Where do we derive our law from? But as far as Latin and French terms, let me throw out a few for you. Voir dire. Voir dire. V-O-I-R-D-I-R-E. Res judicata. Res judicata. All matters with respect to this case have been decided. End of story. No more arguments. Res ipsa locuitor. Res ipsa locuitor. Stare decisis. Know about commercial speech in the Hudson, in the central Hudson test, or the Hudson test. Know a little, I want you to know a little about the Federal Arbitration Act. What's the difference between mediation and arbitration? What are mini trials? Throwing out some simple ideas here. I want you to make sure you know your antitrust legislation, of course. Major provisions. Exclusivity clauses prohibited by what? Come on. That's the Clayton Act. Volume discounting or quantity discounting without economic justification prohibited by Robinson-Patman, Chain Store Act. Federal Trade Commission established, obviously, by the Federal Trade Commission Act. No Sections 1 and 2 of the Sherman Antitrust Act. Actually, I will do that one like the other one, where I'll just give you some acts and have you match them up, okay? As far as discrimination goes, know the difference between disparate treatment and disparate impact. Direct evidence versus indirect evidence. What is necessary to establish prima facie evidence of discrimination? Also, one more in those Latin terms that I forgot. Ratio decidandi. That's another one of those Latin terms you need to know. Ratio, R-A-T-I-O, D-E-C-I-D-E-N-D-I. Ratio decidandi. Know the structure of our court system. I'm not going to get hugely detailed. I mean, at the state level, it can get stupid. But if I told you this trial was held in Superior Court, what would you know? Yeah, it's a state trial. You know, it was under state charges. The district court would be under federal. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that would be a federal court. What would be necessary for a federal court to entertain a case? There is a federal question, or no, a diversity of citizenship. Not international, but a diversity of citizenship just means that it's citizens of different states or companies or something like that that cannot be resolved under state laws. What do you call a state law that has the ability to reach across borders to another state to get somebody? Long-arm statutes. Long-arm statutes. What is required for standing to sue? Standing to sue. There's a case or question, and you have, what did you say? A personal stake. Yes, that's standing to sue. Good. Where are facts established in court? In what court are facts established? Trial courts. What is the difference between a petit jury and a grand jury? Yes. Grand jury indicts. All right. Okay. What's the difference between what a jury does and what a judge does? A jury renders, you just said it there, verdict, and the judge enters judgment. That's why they call him a judge. Now, true or false, a judge must enter the judgment based upon the verdict of the jury. That's right. What do you call it if a judge throws out the jury's decision? I'll let you research. Make sure you know. See, it's fun. It doesn't happen that often, but, you know, it's something to know about. Know about liability in a manufacturing and products. What's strict liability? Yeah. You are liable whether it was your fault or not. Okay. Now, give me some of the... In general liability, give me some of the things that you have to establish. That there was a duty of care, that duty was violated, also, that there was injury. Okay, good. Yeah, know that sequence. I'm not going to go through it in detail. That's why you're studying. Make sure you know about agency, fiduciary duty. Agency costs, and all of that. Know about the Supremacy Clause and the Commerce Clause, very important for business law. No terms like promissory estoppel. Now let me get into torts here. That was a big thing in the course, and I want to make sure that you know about torts. Different ones. Slander versus libel. What's the difference? Oral or written. Slander's oral. What's injurious falsehood? What is false light? Conversion. Crimes against property. Trespass. Other ones, false imprisonment. False arrest. Assault and battery, of course. Those are always the first ones you bring up because those are civil wrongs against non-contractual wrongs, but they're also crimes as well. Remember that a crime is a wrong against society. A tort is a non-contractual wrong against an individual, a person. You can be sent to jail for committing a tort. True or false? False, that's right. Because it's a wrong against a person does not have a prison to put you in. Know about contracts with, huh? Well, I mean, some people would say marriage is a contract. Oh, sorry, let me not push that. Know the difference between statutes and ordinances and laws. If I were to say this is an ordinance, what would you know about that?
Municipal.
Yeah, it's municipal. Statutes are generally state. And then you talk about laws. The word laws is used very loosely, so it's kind of hard to say what that means. Know about habeas corpus. As far as distinguishing among types of law, remember I made distinctions like civil versus criminal law. The book talks about public versus private law. I didn't go into that distinction, but there are other distinctions, like constitutional law, administrative law, criminal law, civil law, contract law, corporation law. There are all kinds of different laws, and common law versus statutory law, of course. If I were to use the term constitutional law, let me probe you. What would I mean by that? No. The Supreme Court has made a ruling on a constitutional matter, and that ruling becomes constitutional law. The Constitution cannot mean anything unless it is interpreted and applied. And that's what creates the body of constitutional law. Our president, George W. Bush, is alleged to have roared when someone said this is violating constitutional rights or something to that effect, violating the Constitution. President Bush is alleged to have roared. That's just a goddamn piece of paper. In a way, although shocking for a president to say something like that, and he probably didn't know what he was talking about when he did say it, there is a more than a grain of truth in that. The Constitution does not have any meaning unless it is interpreted by the courts over a long period of time. Oh, the Fair Labor Standards Act. I forgot. I have ignored that one a little bit. Know some of its major provisions. The Fair Labor Standards Act. For example, it established what? Yeah. For equal work. Be careful, not comparable work, equal pay for equal work. It put serious restrictions on child labor. Kind of an amazing piece of legislation in its time. Those damn liberals got something through that was pretty impressive. Flexible ceiling on work hours worked, and all that kind of stuff. Know the difference between compensatory and punitive, or sometimes punitive. What's the other word for punitive damages? Do you remember it? Exemplary. You're making an example of the person. Exemplary. As far as intentional torts go, know what some of the defenses are against an intentional tort. Know what dicta means. Did I mention fiduciary duty? If I didn't, know the three elements of fiduciary duty. Fiduciary duty. And how fiduciary duty differs fundamentally from any other kind of duty of care. Know how why there is this concept of fiduciary duty. It goes to the idea of the monitoring and enforcement provisions of a contract. In general, the principal has a responsibility to monitor and enforce compliance with the contract by the agent. But in some relationships, there is a persistent defect in the ability of the principal to monitor and enforce. For example, in a child-parent relationship, the child is the principal, the parent is the agent. However, the child has a persistent defect in ability to monitor and enforce behaviors by the parent. Therefore, the parent's duty is fiduciary in nature. The officers and directors of a corporation have fiduciary duty to the shareholders because the shareholders, by definition, are not supposed to be in a position of managing the corporation. They're supposed to be separated. Ownership is separated from management in the theory of the corporation. Therefore, there's a persistent defect in the shareholders' ability to monitor and enforce, especially on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis. And so there's fiduciary duty. Similarly, in a marriage, the marriage is the principal and the husband and wife are the agents. The marriage is by definition unable of its own accord because it is not sentient to monitor and enforce. Therefore, the agents, the man and woman, have a fiduciary duty that is based upon trust. What else? Okay. Yeah, I'll let you study those. You make sure you know those. I've told you enough. There's other things. Respondeat superior is something you should need to know about. Vicarious liability. Respondeat superior derives from the ancient doctrine of imputed liability. Vicarious liability. There were other things too. Under contracts, there's all kinds of things. What are the... I talked about the four elements, but there's other issues too. Legality, capacity. Consideration is very important in contracts, obviously. What constitutes mutuality of consideration is a gift. If you accept a gift, does that establish a contract? Know about fraud. I forgot to mention... You should know about fraud. I'm just being very random here. There's no connection between these. I'm just pulling the last pieces out here. Know about fraud. What about reliance, reasonable reliance? What is the difference between actual knowledge and constructive knowledge? In terms of warranties, if I were to talk about merchantability of goods, under what kind of warranty would that occur? Good for sale kinds of goods, all that. Know about those kinds of things. I touched upon, but I want you to go back and make sure that you know the Colgate Doctrine. Okay? You write that down. Because I just mentioned it, but I will ask about it on the final exam. So know about the Colgate Doctrine. Okay? As far as securities laws go, I will go through that again. I might hit Rule 10B, but I also might go into other things too, Section 18, Section 23, Section 11. It's what I would have gone over in class, of course. Know about I've mentioned this before the podcast, but I want you to know about some of the agencies that have been formed over the years. First agency formed was the ICC, obviously. What agency was formed in 1905? The FDA. Broad authority to regulate anything that affects the body or mind of man. What was the Federal Reserve Act? When was it created? What industry does it regulate? That kind of thing. The EPA was a much later, interestingly enough, during the Nixon administration. I won't ask you, I don't think I mentioned that during the course, so I won't hold you to that one, but there are others, Civil Rights Commission, the EEOC, OSHA, workers' compensation, a no-fault system for making injured workers whole. Know about mitigation in a contract.
How do you accept a bilateral contract?
No, by the way, there are some things in contract, there were two different terms. Like, for example, the deposited acceptance rule. What's the common term for that one? Do you remember? Yeah, that's the mailbox rule. Good. And how about the parole evidence rule? What did I call it? Yeah, Four Corners Doctrine. So know that, because I'll see if I can test you on that, because when you are in business, oftentimes you'll have people use different terms, but they'll mean the same essential concept.
Can't emphasize, know your con law. Make sure you know your constitutional law. Due process. What amendment? And also, it's in the fourth, but it's in both.
How about the right to a speedy trial? Yeah, I guess I already did that one. Eminent domain is brought up where? Ooh, Fifth Amendment. How about the separation clause? There were the First Amendment. There was a separation clause and the establishment clause. They were paired up there. The separation clause and the establishment clause. Also, know about the fact that the Constitution explicitly prohibits a religious test for public office. And so this was when the Constitution repeats itself on a matter, that's a fairly important idea there, that the framers were trying to make a point. Like, if you see due process, it's the 14th Amendment, but it's also in the Bill of Rights. So that must have been an important matter. Separation of church and state is brought up several times. So apparently that must have been a rather useful matter. Due process is actually, you see due process in the 4th, the 5th, and the 14th Amendment. It keeps coming up over and over. They were really bitchy about this. And that's why this whole mania of snooping into our lives that's going on now, especially with this new ridiculous FISA bill that both of our presidential candidates thought was such great stuff, is such an outrage against the framers were screaming, look, don't do this kind of stuff. This is the road to tyranny. When the government can go and look at everything we have without any cause against us, probable cause that is specific to us. Now, well, we want to see everyone's ISP internet record, so maybe we'll find something on someone. Someone's been going to look at terrorist sites or kiddie porn sites or something like that. That's not what the framers wanted. They kept repeating it. And here we are just violating the hell out of it. I'm sorry. I feel that pain in my head coming again when they start that busting into our rights stuff. As far as civil rights go, I want to remember that I talked about some of the history of the civil rights movement. Like the group that the black porters, and that
had something to say about their treatment, and they marched on Washington long, long ago. Remember the Civil Rights Act of 1866 that prohibited contractual discriminations, which essentially created the basis of employment discrimination, because employments are contractual. That there were other civil rights acts, and also the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. What is, by the way, what's the, and reasonable accommodation? What is the standard for reasonable accommodation? What is a bona fide occupational qualification? What do I mean by that? I didn't mention it. I don't think I put it on here. I'll have to check. But just FYI, what's the age threshold for age discrimination claims? I didn't, don't worry about it. I've already gone through, but it's with respect to the process in a trial. Know the phases and know the terminology within the phases. The complaint, the answer, all that. Affidavits, interrogatories, subpoenas, all those different terms. This seems to trip people up, and it's, what's the difference between the appellant and the appellee? Who's who at what stages within the process? I might ask you some stupid questions. How many Supreme Court justices are there? Nine. I could be mean. And I'm not going to entertain any answers now, but I might just throw one at you. Who is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States? Just to be cruel to you. That's enough. Ask me questions. Got any questions?
Still dropping the lowest grade for our
cases. Yeah, cases, yeah.
And
yeah.
The lowest one for the
quizzes, yes. Yeah. You have any questions about the final exam? I mean, I pretty thoroughly covered it. I mean, that what we just did in this hour was, or not quite an hour, was a pretty thorough, and that'll give you a lot to study. Seriously. No. But like I said, the test, if you know this stuff, you'll be able to slam dunk this. There is not huge deviation from what I've asked you on exams. Because exams, I'm covering my objectives, and so here at the end, I'm just trying to reestablish that they have sunk in enough that you can make it through the final. I think the hardest parts of this, there's memory work, but things like what sections of the UCC deal with express warranties versus implied, those can get people. Things like, like what parts of what is outlawed by what in the antitrust legislation in the early part, in the last part of the 19th century and the first half of the 20th century. Those are difficult. Oh, be sure you know, by the way, one last thing. Be sure you know what industries are exempt from antitrust legislation and why they are. Like, for example, certain intra-city newspaper printing agreements are exempt. Hospitals are exempt. HMOs are exempt. Labor unions are exempt. Why are labor unions exempt from antitrust laws? Because they have their own set of laws that regulate them. What is the logic of exempting baseball franchises from antitrust legislation? They're self-policing. What's the logic behind exempting hospitals from antitrust legislation? The idea there was that, especially in rural areas, there might be one hospital, that there wouldn't be enough profit for more than one hospital. So you can't just say, well, you're a monopoly, we're going to bust you, if that's the only hospital that can afford to stay in business for a large area. That kind of logic. A lot of this logic is less logical now than it might have been at one time, and there have been considerable abuses of exemptions. Let me ask you something. Suppose that I, as a blogger,
call for a consumer boycott of a product. And I get a whole bunch of people, a lot of people, to boycott this product. Am I exempt from antitrust legislation for acting to in conspiracy, for trying to create a conspiracy, a scheme in restraint of trade? Am I exempt? Believe it or not, I'm not. Normally, there are harbors, safe harbors, court recognized or just commonly recognized safe harbors. But as a blanket rule, no, I am not exempt. Yes, I do. But that is mitigated by the fact that the government has the right to regulate commerce. So there are two parts of the Constitution there that are kind of rubbing against each other, because that Commerce Clause allows the government to oversee antitrust regulation stopping trust from being created and conspiracies to create trust. Definitely there's legitimacy to it. But at the same time, I do have a right to free speech. Definitely. And I have a right to assemble. But how would the court see that? Well, it is not in the antitrust legislation that I am exempt in creating consumer boycotts. So I would have to rely on something other than the statutory exemption within the language of the Act to protect an antitrust law to protect me from a claim of restraint of trade. Especially if there could be shown that I materially benefited from this consumer boycott in some way. Like, for example, if I called for a consumer boycott and I was against the company and I was advertising the competitor's products, I would have to watch myself on that. That's why you'll notice on my main website, I will criticize Verizon Wireless, but I wouldn't call for a boycott of them because I advertise competitors' products. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.